this is our discussion with Michael Coughlin about podcasting, and it was really good to hear everyone put their thoughts together on the pedagogy involved with podcasting, and it was great to hear Trevor Bennett talking about the history of podcasting at Edith Cowan University.
It was actually interesting because when I got interested in podcasting, I could not get any traction at all across the university, no matter who I talked to at the level above me, to try and get some traction on podcasting.
When was this out of interest?
This is a year and a half, 2 years ago. So it was when it was, you know, just kind of starting. I think it's podcasting started in 2004, late 2004. So I would have been early 2005. Actually, it's interesting because I did go actually through my records and try and find the first thing. It must have been, yeah, beginning of 2005. And I couldn't get any traction. They just had no idea. So what I did was I set up a website, you know, on iPods and anyone on podcasting. And then I started using the Teach Learn List server to put stuff out. And I actually found through that three or four other people that had kind of tweaked to this in other faculties and had kind of got interested. So then I collected what they were doing and started putting that up on the website. So what I did was I used the listserv really as a way to collect the commonality of experience and what people were doing. And then when you put all that stuff up and then you went to the people upstairs, they could see that there was something kind of going on. And then fortunately the ABC started podcasting, and once the ABC started podcasting,
everyone was
obviously legitimate. So, you know. But yeah, it's a tool that you can use. Because the thing I've found with technologies at the university is there's about a 3 to 5 year gap between when a piece of technology becomes, you know, available and when it actually starts to generate traction. We introduced Blackboard to the university, and it's only now, 5 years later, that the outer reaches of the university are just coming to grips with it. And it takes a long time. And unfortunately, technology moves faster than the 3 to 5 year cycle. Mm-hmm. So stuff comes and goes, you know, so it's really difficult to get that traction fairly early on. You know, and there's definitely kudos for educational institutions and being, you know, on board. I mean, UWA, for example, they got into podcasting fairly early. They'd already had Lectopia going, and then they basically moved that into podcasting, and they're selling that all over the world. So, you know, there's definitely some kudos for getting into that stuff. And they did it they had a problem because they had students in Albany that needed to receive lectures from Perth, so they built this system basically to shut stuff to Albany, and then that's basically where it went from there.
As you were saying yesterday, that set up this domino effect where organisations or universities are finding that they've got to do it because they're doing it, so they're getting Lectopia because otherwise
there's no way you can widespread podcast in a university without an automated system. It just becomes very hard, doesn't it?
As I mentioned to you, UWA is having problems because one of the problems they're having is the timetabling system doesn't allow people to enrol in subjects that are on at the same time. And now with Lectopia, they just say, well, I don't have to go to the lecture, I can go to Lectopia. So they've had timetabling problems because the timetable's going, no, you can't have these two people in the same, you know, place at the same time. You can't be going to this lecture and the same lecture. So that's been an administrative issue. And the other thing I've heard is that people are stopping going to lectures. So
that's a problem.
Well, for some lecturers it is. It's their raison d'etre. So they're being forced to cope with that kind of technological change, you know, before really they've had a chance to kind of work it through the system. You know, it amazes me at a university just how wedded people are to lecturing.
They're just lecturing to less people. And the fact is that a whole lot of people are listening more closely to what they're saying in another form.
Yeah. I know, but it's strange. But it's a modality that they kind of
at the same time they've developed those lecturing skills by doing it in front of a live audience and being able to see their reaction, and you don't get that. I mean, it would be quite difficult. Yes, the performance aspect of it. So you know what works and what hasn't. The other thing that you also get is the huge problem they've got in the States now is that people are enrolling in two universities at once because it's all done online. So they're doing 2 degrees at once, or enrolling in the same course in both one, and the notes they're getting from one issuing as assignments in the other, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Degrees. And that's
the stuff that's coming up now is we have podcast. So what's the precast and the postcast? you know, what do you do before a podcast and what do you do after a podcast? So you've got the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So what do you do with the precast and what do you do with the postcast? And people are starting to ask those sort of questions. So they can the idea of a podcast is fine, but what do you actually do with it as far as, you know, how do you build that into it in a kind of a teaching learning strategy? And that podcasting has gone through the roof without anyone even beginning to ask themselves those kind of questions.
Have you had a look at ClickView? At ClickView? Virtually all the schools have got ClickView at the moment. Have you seen
this? You were telling me about it, weren't you?
Well, ClickView is basically a video bank software.
Yeah, okay? That's right, you were telling me.
And it divides up the videos into sizable chunks so that they'll go over a network. And it basically it puts them down into scenes, and you can have a default of so many minutes. Okay, but not only that, but you can attach documents and stuff to it, so like a worksheet. So it's possible in ClickView for the student to have the video running down here and the worksheet available to them on Word at the front.
So in all these years, we've still basically gone back to the same technology, show the vid and do fill in
But you can also put podcasts and images and JPEGs and a whole lot of other stuff in there.
It's still basically using the same strategy.
I know. What I'm saying is it's the only way. I mean, it's the same thing as you get with the library type of thing. I sort of see podcasts a bit more like, you've got all these librarians and we get up there and we buy these beautiful books and we polish them up and we put them on shelves and go, there we go, off you go, isn't that fantastic? But it needs to be put within some sort of learning environment. In some ways, podcasting and stuff can be a bit silent. It's a great sort of information thing, but then someone has to put it in that learning environment. But ClickView is the only one I can see that's actually tried to do that.
But
you license all your
it's true, but,
it. But it's actually a repository software.
But whenever I have these conversations, I've had these kind of conversations with staff, and they're always talking about getting stuff to the students. They never get around to thinking about, well, how can I use the podcasting to get stuff from the students back to me?
Yes.
I'd argue, look, let the lecturers lecture.
Yes.
Do what they always did. Just the change is you can get that information back to me in whatever format suits you.
Yes, yes.
Right? But I'm going to deliver this way. And that would be a huge change.
Yeah.
Mm. And the students would be a whole lot happier because they're not going to give you a lecture back.
But I mean, like, for example, the stuff that you're doing, you know, just in a practical situation, if you can capture someone's first attempt at fixing a car, someone's 15th attempt at fixing a car, and someone's 22nd attempt at fixing a car, and for them to actually just view that and see the differences and then reflect on, you know, what's improved and how you're doing things differently, that's a much more useful.
Yeah, well, and that's what...
Yeah, so we're sort of experimenting with that idea. As far as last year, we had a project with podcasts. We didn't look at it just as a delivery mechanism, but also as an assessment mechanism. We looked at it from an Indigenous remote community point of view. You know, the idea that they find it more easier to actually tell stories into mobile devices, and hopefully they could then podcast that back to us or whatever. So.
And that I think is part. That I think is the most exciting stuff: the cheap cameras, the cheap video cameras, the cheap recording devices. Those sorts of things students can use.
Actually, the cheap devices often work better.
That's right, because everyone's got them.
Yeah. Well, not only that they've just got them. Most of what I've found is the cheaper devices. You don't have to install any fancy software, and you can, it's just quite easy to transfer things across. It's only the more expensive ones I tend to have trouble with.
These are kind of little podcasts of people doing stuff, and what you're doing when you're listening to the podcast is you're actually, you're getting a whole kind of, there's a kind of way of speaking and a way of approaching a problem that when they talk about these things that they get, that you don't get from a piece of text. So, for example, if I wanted to know something about Ajax, for example, when it was first starting out, you could go to some of the websites, of which there are a few, and look at that. But if you actually went to some of the podcasts from Ajax and listened to the people that are actually developing this stuff talking, you got a much richer environment of what was really kind of going on. Because by the time it got to the website, that was going to be, you know, quite a considerable way down the track. So podcasting is, in a sense, is a bit like what you're doing in Web Tips, but it's a kind of frozen moment in time of a conversation.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things we identified in these two practices over the last 2 years, the difference between spoken and written text. And spoken seems to be a lot more about the process. the thought going on between here and here. Writing tends to be a more finished product.
It's true, but it's also in the inflection or the tone of voice that people take when they're talking. So if you're all talking about something and they're all kind of thinking it's probably not so good, but they're not quite sure, you can pick it up in the kind of tone of voice that they're using when they're talking about this particular development. You know, a lot of that stuff doesn't come out in text either. Yes, and I agree with you. So it's quite, you can get a lot of stuff. Like one of the things I've always found when you're doing online courses, the hardest thing to get across to students is the underlying paradigms of the field of study that you're dealing with. Because when you're going to a lecturer will say to you, a good one will say, these are the main developments. I don't think that's going anywhere. I think this one's quite important. Or don't read here, look at this. Whereas if you look at the text body across the whole totality, it's very difficult for a novice user to be able to pick all of those things up. So when you're talking about something, you can actually really, it's a really good inroad into a complex field, you know, just simply by the way things have been dismissed or the way things are accentuated, all of that kind of stuff comes out, which again you don't get from text. Mm-hmm. And I think the audio stuff is, for bang for buck, it's really, really powerful, you know, in that regard.
Which kind of balances my primary concern about podcasting is that it's another vehicle through which teachers, lecturers can bombard students with content. But if it's done well and they're getting all that nuance of meaning and tone, then good.
Well, I quite agree with you, because I think basically podcasting a lecture, you know, and that's where most of the universities are thinking about. That's a very, very low end of it. But discussion groups that are going on, or someone who comes into the university and gives a discussion or runs a discussion on some area, and they're only going to ever turn up this year and they're ever going to be here for an hour, you can capture that and very easily and send that out. That sort of stuff is useful. But I think there's definitely a lot more scope for students to be using the podcasting, you know, to actually push that back to lecturers.
Mm-hmm. And you know what the thing I like about it the most is, you know, I've visited you and I've visited Tamer at UWA, and you both say the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing, you know, that we're pushing out the lecturers, but we should be going the other way. It should be students.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just as a cost-effective thing, I mean, there's so many of our students that stand up in front of a tutorial group and give a presentation, you know, and everyone has to sit through this wretched tutorial group, this wretched presentation. And you only can only do one a semester because we have 12-week semesters and that's it.
12 students, yeah.
And so basically, you know, two or three of their tutorials are sit with, you know, going through these wretched things. Well, they could still do that. I still think there's definitely a need for students to stand up in front and give a good talk. But they could do a podcast first.
Can I give you another example?
Go on.
You may have heard of similar things, and this gets back to WebHeads. I mean, you missed your question.
But we will get back to your question.
Fine.
Butina, who lives in Kuwait, had the idea that instead of the boring, dreadful oral presentation, she invited a number of WebHeads to go live into her classroom.
Yeah.
And this happened over several weeks, and I had the pleasure one day to be one of two people who listened to this oral presentation and gave feedback and asked questions. So what that did, of course, was that student was all of a sudden aware they had a global audience and they had a sort of a critical panel on the other end of the world that they were addressing, as well as the people in front of them. Now, her write-up of that is it had an amazing effect on the quality of the presentations. It was certainly a mind-blowing experience for me, sitting at my desk in Adelaide, to hear these people talk about water problems in Kuwait and these young Kuwaiti students. Mm. And it was just a brilliant use of the technology, Yahoo Messenger.
Yeah, but even in this thing, like podcasting this, because even someone who is in this room, not someone outside the room, because when you're having a discussion or a conversation, someone says to you, your brain kind of goes off in a slight direction. So the next part of their conversation you're kind of only vaguely hearing because it's your brain's gone off in this direction. So having this kind of recorded and podcasted so you can listen to it again, you actually get, you know, something else out of the kind of conversation. Mm. So, you know, to me, the whole thing about podcasting that's so exciting is that it's the ease of use for a rich media technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very easy way to capture, you know, either voice or video. Mm-hmm. You know.
There are some logistical issues, unfortunately, with that idea of the students giving back to the lecturers. We used this at the Military Language Institute in Abu Dhabi.
That's how you know that.
Yeah, yeah. And
I've been there.
Yeah, I worked there for 3 years.
Maybe that's where you went.
And so at one point, we decided that as one of the assessment tools, and also as part of activities, because we were in a very high-tech environment, that we would have the students, we would give them a scenario, and they would record something, and we would assess it using an assessment rubric. But of course, the problem that we ran into was that with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, because we were talking about
the Abu Dhabi Army,
plus also participants from a lot of the ministries as well. Yeah. So hundreds of recordings, and even though we were using, I think we were using MP3 layer 3, we were using compressed. we ended up with a storage problem because with the amount of time that it took to assess it, because everyone had to be listened to. So we did have a large number of assessors, but we couldn't do it just like that. So we needed to store those. And then there was the issue of, well, do we want to keep them for the students? This is the first term. Do we want to keep those and compare them to the next term? And so, yeah, there was the logistical problems of A, storage, and B, the time that it took to actually go through all of these, because of course, you know, as we've talked before, if you're given a written assignment, and as teachers, you know, we've said before, you scan through, you can look at something and basically assess that or get some really quick idea of what it's about and the level that it's at. But with a voice recording, they can start out quite slow in as much as they're a bit unsure of how they go, and then they'll roll into it. But really, to give it any sort of credible assessment, you should listen to it for at least a minute. you know?
Yeah.
And you can always take that little bar and move it along a bit so you hear his excerpts, you know.
I think the answer to your question, though, is, first of all, to my way of thinking, a lot of what I would like students to be podcasting, I wouldn't put in the field of assessment at all, so you get it out of that. But I do realise there are logistics problems. But when you're doing something like assessing a recording that someone makes, what you have to be very clear about when you're doing that is what you're actually assessing. So what are you assessing? If you're actually assessing the technical ability that someone has of actually doing a recording, then the first thing I'd be doing is getting other students to assess it. So you can get 5 people to watch that and write a report. And they should be able to identify those kind of technical things. If it's a personal growth pattern of a student, you could get them to write a report where they actually are doing like what they thought about it when they watched it. So there are ways of getting around that without doing an awful lot of watching.
Of course, we were assessing them for language ability.
Right,
so
that's
so it was
difficult.
A different situation. I definitely think there is huge potential with podcasting.
Yeah.
But I'm still a great believer in a more blended learning environment where podcasting is an element along with many other elements. And what I've seen happen on so many occasions that a fantastic new tool like podcasting comes along and people really get nuts about it and they say, we just want to make podcasting this big and all that other stuff can be over there for a while. But what I really see is, what's that guy's name? Is it Curtis Bonk? Yes. I saw him speak and he speaks about blended learning environments and I'm also a great believer in bringing in every sort of element that you can into a classroom or into a learning environment so that you give people with different learning styles the opportunity to grab what they need in order to come out the other end with the information that they require. And we find that so many people, the cross-section, are text-based learners. Some are audio learners, some are visual learners, and if we bring all those elements in and give people the opportunity, of course, as Michael says, we have to watch out for this, the problem with cognitive load and what we're actually throwing at them all at once. An environment that creates all of those elements that people can choose from, I think, is really the way to go.
And I would totally agree with you.
The other bit is that some information is best sent through certain channels too.
Sure.
It's not just the learner. Some things are better
communicating
in text, some in videos.
Well,
all I'd say to you is to take that idea and then flip it over to the student side. So in most cases, you mandate their reporting back to you.
Mm.
So take the same flexibility and get them to have a choice between how they report back. We did a trial with our university preparation students where they were kind of issued with an iPod and they could kind of do what they like with it. Most of them just played music. But what we found was when they were doing their presentations, a lot of the girls preferred to do a podcast than to give a live presentation. And the reason they preferred that is because they could control it and they could do it right and they could get it absolutely perfect. The way they wanted it. They weren't perfect, but for them, that was a much better reporting mechanism, whereas a lot of the other students were quite happy to stand up and just give a talk about a particular topic or to write a paper. So what I'm saying, this is why I think these technologies are the cameras and things like that, because they actually empower the students to be able to vary the kinds of things that they can do from their side. And I think too often, simply because of the logistics of it, I don't want all these assignments to come in online, or some to come in online, or some to come in on bits of paper. It's too much work for me. Basically, I just want all these things to be in a box, in a big piece of thing, and I can just handle it. So there has to be some freeing up of that process where the students can have a choice in how they actually report back to you.
Yeah,
and obviously
right.
That requires extra work for the lecturers, but I think in certain circumstances it could be quite useful.
Mm.
Yeah.